Let's do some examples for the electric potential. We'll hopefully make some things clear. Now, we talked about how to calculate what the electric potential was and how to calculate it for a single charge. But now what you want to do is you want to, as you know, almost every chapter that we go through for now is it does this. It starts with one charge, and then it does a bunch of them, and then it does the continuous charge distribution. So we're going to go through that. So now let's say we have several charges, Q1, Q2, and Q3. And I want to know what is V at this point, okay? So the way that we do this is analogous to how we do some other things, but there's one important difference. Here, in general, let me first say this. For each of the V sub I's, we've already come up with the relationship that V sub I, this is the potential, or I'll slip and say voltage, but the potential from each point charge. So the I is the subscript here, 1, 2, 3, right? Or 4, or 5, 6, whatever. If I want to calculate what the potential is, the total potential, V total, then it's going to be equal to the sum over I of these V sub I's. Okay? Okay? So we're going to sum it. But the big issue here, which makes this different than a force calculation for multiple charges or the electric field calculation for multiple charges that we did before, is that this is a scalar. So there's no vector addition here. Okay? Doesn't matter that this one is in this direction, I mean, that the charges, what direction they are. All that matters is I add up the potential from each of those charges. Okay? It's a scalar because it was the scalar product, E dot ds, that we did before. All right? So this is an important thing. It's important to keep in mind this for the potential, just as it's important to keep in mind the other for the electric field and the force, that they're vectors and you have to add them as vectors. Yeah, sorry. Say it again. This one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. The E field, E for one charge, you would write it like this. If it was just the magnitude, it would look like this. K Q I over R I squared. Okay? Yeah, be careful. Yeah. All right? Be careful. One rule of thumb, force has two charges in the top and two R's in the bottom in terms of, you know, product. The E field has one charge and two R's, and the voltage has one charge and one R, all right, in terms of the powers of charge and radius, distance, okay? So keep those separate as well. All right, so, okay, that's fine. So let's actually do a problem here. Let's take a charge, Q1, Q2, oh no, let's call this Q3, Q2, Q4, and then a point here in the middle, P. And each of these distances, is 4 meters. Okay? So this is a square. All of these sides are a distance A. All right, and then let's the charges. Q1 equals 1 times 10 to the minus 8th coulombs. Q2 equals minus 20 nanocoulombs. Q3 is going to be plus 20 nanocoulombs. And Q4 is going to be plus 30 nanocoulombs. Okay, so they're all positive except for Q2. And this is a little funny. 1 times 10 to the minus 8 coulombs, let's just call that 10 nanocoulombs. Okay? So those are the charges. And we know the geometry, so we know where P is. P is in the center of this area. We know what P, the distance of P is to each of these charges. So what we're going to do is we're going to calculate V equals K, the sum over I of Q sub I over R sub I. And now, what can we say about the distance of this point to each of these charges? Are they different or the same? The same, okay? So that makes our life slightly easier. So what we do is we say, okay, well, we have four charges, Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3 plus Q4, and then all over R. It's the same distance, okay? And we'll call this distance R, okay? All right, well, we know all the charges, so if I add 10 plus 20 minus 20 plus 30, I'm going to get 40 nanocoulombs. And then as far as the radius, R, well, that distance has to be there's a triangle here, and this triangle, it's an isosceles triangle, and it has two sides with lengths a over 2. Okay? So this is going to be the square root of a over 2 squared plus another a over 2 squared. Okay? Okay? Which is going to be the square root of 2 times a squared over 4. And then we can cancel this 2 and this 4, the square root of a over 2 over 2. And then this is then a over the square root of 2. Now, okay, so that's the radius, so we can put that in here. Okay, and the radius A is 4 meters. So let's separate these out. So this is then K times 40 nanocoulombs over 4 meters divided by the square root of 2. Okay, let's just make sure that this is,
Shouldn't it have been 2a squared over 2? That r equals a over 2 squared plus a over 2 squared.
Yeah, what it is here, okay, I skipped a step, but yeah, this I think this answer is correct. But so this is 2a squared over 4, right? Because there's 2 squared underneath each. Okay, so you could cancel this 2 and this 4, and you get a 2 down here. Okay? And so you get square root of a squared over square root of 2, which equals a over the square root of 2. Okay? Which is what I had. All right? So that's fine, but I have not got the units right here in my answer, so let's just go through it. I can write this. This is just a little algebra here, but I can move this around such that I have the square root of 2 times 10 nanocoulombs divided by... I see what I did. Okay. Divided by 1 meter, so I've divided out the 4. And then when I put in k, which is 4 times 10 to the 9 times 10 to the 9th, and the units, what I end up... Now I see what I did. Okay. 127 newton meters per coulomb. Okay? Okay. Okay? So it's just plugging in... It got a little messy over here. So the two pieces are, here's the summation. You have each of your charges. You just add them up. You got to figure out what R is. So that's this calculation here. And then you just plug in the numbers and you should get it. But here it was done as a scalar sum, not a vector sum. All right? Okay. Okay, actually need to move along here. So that's if you have a finite number of individual charges and you can sum over the potential resulting in each case. But in many cases, what you end up with is some blob of charge that doesn't have any particular shape or has a complicated shape. And you want to know what is the potential out here at some point P, okay? So what what we did in the single case was V was K, the sum over QI over RI, okay? But in the limit that I have a ton of charges and I can't really do this sum, and it doesn't become a discrete set of charges, it becomes sort of a continuous set of charges, this becomes Q, the integral of dQ over R, where my dQs are, in this case, this is a volume, so my dQs are these little tiny volumes, dV, which have, containing some amount of charge, dQ. Okay? So now, these dQs take the place of my Q sub I's in the summation. And now I have to do an integral here. Okay? So let's try an example. Let's consider a case where we have a line charge, a line of charge. This is not an infinite line of charge. It's a line of charge that has some length, little l. Okay? This is the x-axis. This is the y-axis. And I want to be at some point here on the y-axis, P. And this point, P, is some distance, A, above my line charge on the y-axis. Now, I want to figure out what is my potential here at point, P, from this line charge. So what I'm going to have to do is integrate over this whole thing. All right? And so there will be along here little dQs that are creating an electric potential at point P. So let's write down the rest of the coordinates. The x distance here to dQ is x. And then there's some radius, r, which is the distance from dQ to P. And this dQ, this is a line density. So that dQ has some extent dx. So it's some little tiny snippet of this line charge, infinitesimal in size, and we're calculating the potential from that little piece. Okay? All right, now, and we know, let's see, do we know? Yeah. So we know, for instance, that there is some total charge on this line of Q, and it's a uniform charge density. Okay? In which case, what would happen is my charge density is going to be capital Q over L. Okay? That's just because I'm just taking the total amount of charge, dividing it by the length that the charge is distributed over. So the question is, what's the potential? Well, first we need to know what R is. R is going, because, again, well, I mean, look at the integral that we have here. We're going to need to know what R is, and we're going to need to know what dQ is in a way that we can integrate this thing. So R is, in terms of things that we know, equal to x squared plus a squared. X is not a constant. It's the thing that's varying as we move along this line, and a is a constant. Okay? This doesn't lend itself to any other but a rectilinear coordinate system. It doesn't lend itself to spherical coordinates or cylindrical coordinates or whatever. It does just x, y, z. So that's R. And the charge density is lambda. So what we can do is we can say, well, what is dV? dV is this little piece. dV is just k dQ over r. So what is dV? Well, it's k. And then our dQ is going to be lambda times dx. So it's the charge density times the infinitesimal length of our little element of the line charge. And then r we have up here. So we have x squared, square root of x squared plus a squared. So now we have this thing in terms of the only variable that matters here is x, right? Everything else, lambda and a and k, are all constants, okay? Whereas before, we had it in terms of two variables we didn't know, r and q. Now we have it just all in terms of x as the only unknown variable. So, okay, so that's dv. And now we can integrate it. So V is going to be K, the integral of lambda dx over x squared plus a squared. Okay? We can move the lambda out because it's a constant. So let's put that there. All right? And now we have the integral of dx over the square root of x squared plus a squared, which I will just state. So this equals k lambda. And then we want, what is the integral? What is this integral? This is a standard integral that I believe is in the back of your book. And that integral, I left something out here. This integral is from 0 x equals 0 to x equals L. We're integrating over the entire length of the line. Sorry. Okay? So this is L squared plus A squared over A. Okay? And we can write this another way. It just depends on how we what kind of information. If instead we had the linear charge, if we had the actual charge and we know the length, probably the better way to write this would be okay. So if we know the length of this line, we know how far in the perpendicular direction we are from it, and we know the total charge, then we can just plug those numbers in. So this is an expression. Any of these examples we do that end up with an expression, you should consider putting these kinds of things on your equation summary sheet and being familiar with how they were derived and what they're valid for. Okay. Because those are expressions that get used. I don't ask you to do the integral again, but I do ask that you understand how we got it and why and how to use it. Okay. Are there any questions about that? No? All right, let's do one more calculation and we'll take a brief break. All right, let's consider a case where we have a disk of charge. And, well, we want to know, well, okay, so on this disk, we have a few things. First of all, there's some total charge Q, and we also know what the radius of this disk is. The radius is A, and so the charge density is Q over pi A squared. Okay, so we have the charge density. And we want to know, okay, we've got a point P out here. What is the potential from this charge distribution? Okay? Okay. Well, we can... First, we can look at this thing and we can try to determine what kinds of symmetries there are. And what can I say, for instance, about if I was at a distance r here... And we're going to be dealing with little dqs here. Here's a dq, and here's a dq, but they're both at a distance r from the center of the disk. What is going to be the magnitude of the potential from each of those dqs at point P? Not what is the value, but how do they compare to each other? It's the same. It's the same because this distance and this distance are the same, okay? And the amount of charge is going to be the same. It's just a dq, okay? So the potential will be the same. So actually, and you can go further. You can say, well, it's going to be the same for anything that's at that radius. So there's actually an annulus here that is very thin, that goes around that disk. So everybody in that annulus is at the same distance from point P. So any dq on any place here will have the same potential at point P as any other. So say this one. Okay? So if I can calculate the potential at this point, I can multiply it by something that says how many dqs there are in that annulus. Okay, so let's go back to dq. What is dq? Well, we have our charge density here. So I have I got to be a little careful here. So I could do a dq where I have each little segment here, but I can also take each of these annuli and say for an infinitesimal width of that ring, okay, here. This, all of the charge in this annulus is my dq. Okay? So how do I do that? Well, I can say that it's the charge density, which is the charge per area, times the area in that annulus. Well, that annulus, if I were to take this annulus, and, you know, it looks like this, but I could cut it and I could stretch it out, it would just be a really long, thin rectangle. Okay, so the length of this annulus, okay, so it's sigma times A, well, the length of this thing, okay, is going to be 2 pi times the radius of the annulus, 2 pi r. Or, well, the way that I've done it, actually, 2 pi y. Okay, so this is the y direction. Okay, and so that's the length, but now I need the width. Well, the width of this annulus is just going to be dr. Sorry, dy. Actually, I'm not sure why I'm using the parameter y, but oh, probably because I'm using r here. Okay, so y is the distance radially out from the center of this disk. Okay? Now, so that right here, this is my expression for dq. Now, in my expression, so I know dq, I need to know r. So this is r here, and r is going to be this distance here, plus squared, plus this distance here squared, square root. So let's call, all right, the way that I've set this up, let's call this distance r. This distance we've already said is y, and we'll call the hypotenuse here r prime. This is going to equal r squared plus y squared. R is a constant. In this particular case, y is not, because it changes as I go out. So now, if I go to do my voltage calculation, I have sigma 2 pi y dy over r. Okay? So this is now my integral that I would do to calculate what the potential is for the whole disk. And what I'm doing is I'm integrating from 0 to A. So I do this annulus, I go all the way out till I get the annulus at the outer edge of the disk. This equals K2 sigma pi times the integral from 0 to A of y dy square root of r squared plus a squared. But this equals sigma over 2 epsilon naught. So I can simplify that slightly. If you do some algebra, put in that k is 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught, I would get that this piece here is sigma over 2 epsilon naught. And this is another standard integral that you have. And so if I do a replacement of the first piece, and then if I finish the integral, then what this ends up being is a squared plus r squared minus r. A squared plus r squared square root minus r. Okay? So this is now the potential from a disk with radius A. So a really key concept that's related to the idea of electric potential is the idea of equipotential. Okay. Is that a question? No. All right, so let's imagine that we have a charge Q. Now, if we were to draw the electric field lines from this charge, okay, if this is a positive charge, for instance, all those electric field lines are pointing away from the charge. Okay? So these are the E field lines. Now, what we want to know, we want to actually describe something about the, what does, that tells us something about what the electric field looks like. And we can say that the electric field near the charge is high because the density of those lines is high. And we can say the electric field far away is low because the density of those lines is low. Right? Okay, that's fine. But now we want to consider, what about the potential? How can we come up with a way of describing the potential? Right? Well, one useful way to do that is to say, okay, let's consider some distance here, r, from this point charge. And that point is going to have some potential v. Okay? And then we look at the problem and we say, well, this is a point charge, so there's some symmetry such that if I were to go over here, and this is also a distance r, what would be my potential? V. Okay? If I were to go over here a distance r, my potential would also be V. So, and if, you know, so I keep doing that. So every r I go, I have a V here, I have a V here, V, you know. Okay? So these are all points where my potential is V. And if I filled them all, what I would find is that everybody on this spherical surface has the same potential, because they're all at the same distance with respect to the point charge, Q. Okay? All right? So these are all at the same V. And it's this that we call equipotential or equal potential. And I think you'll be using these, if you haven't already, in your lab, for those that are doing the lab. Okay? So if I were to compare this point and this point, the voltage difference, the potential difference, would be zero, because they're at the same potential. Everything closer to the point charge has a higher potential. Okay, so this is V plus something. And everything further away has a lower potential. So this is V minus something. Okay? So the potential is decreasing as you go radially away from this point charge. And I can draw equipotentials at any radius I want. There's an equipotential here. It's just at a different potential than this surface. Okay? One way that people sometimes draw this is if you were to produce, let's say my point charge was here, and what I just cared about was radius, r, then, and this, the axis in the vertical direction was the potential, what I would end up with is a surface that, and I can't quite draw it, but it's basically a surface that has a very high value at the origin, at the origin, and then declines as 1 over r, And it looks kind of like a cone. It just sort of spreads out as you go further in R. Okay? And okay, there's another thing to note, which is that these electric field lines, E is parallel to R. Okay? These equipotential lines, now potential is not a vector, but these equipotential lines at any given point do have an orientation. So the question is, you know, what is that orientation? Well, what you find is that equipotential lines are perpendicular to the E field. And that's always true. At any given point, the electric field lines and the equipotential lines are going to be perpendicular to each other. So that's worth noting. The other thing is, whenever I change R, if I'm here and I go a little bit further out, so that would be I'm here, if I go a little bit further out, what's going to happen is that my potential is going to drop. If I go further in, my potential is going to get larger. So every change in R corresponds to a change in potential. So we can actually think about what we're saying here. We can write this down mathematically as being dV, which for some infinitesimal little change in R, I have a dV. This is going to equal, in general, a minus E vector dot dS vector. Okay, that's the general expression. And this is the potential difference for 2 points. So if I'm here and here, I want to know, and they're dS apart, I want to know what the potential difference is. Now, in the sphere, if dS is here and then I move along an equipotential, then dS vector is going to be perpendicular to E vector, and so the dot product is going to go to zero. So the only thing that matters is whatever the component of dS is in the radial direction for this particular situation. Okay? So for a point charge, is going to equal, dV is going to equal, so this is the general case. This is the point charge case. D equals a minus of the R component of the electric field, which is the only component, times the little dr that I changed. So this is the expression for the point charge. And I can rearrange this into something that nicely shows us what the relationship is between the electric field and the potential. Now, if there were any mathematicians in the room, they would come up here and strangle me, because I guarantee that this is not mathematically rigorous, but okay. It's there's probably division by zeros and all kinds of problems. But in any case, you're just doing the algebra here to get us to the point where we have E sub R equals minus dV over dr. But this is actually very interesting, because what it's telling you is that the electric field is proportional to, with a negative sign, but it's proportional to the rate of change of the potential with radius. Okay, so it's the electric field is like the potential change per distance. That's another way to think about the potential. The electric field. Okay? And that can be very useful in electronics, actually, for instance. In general, I certainly won't derive it, but in general, what you would have is the following expressions. So each component of the electric field equals the minus the partial derivative of the potential with respect to that particular coordinate. So the x component of the electric field is the rate of change of the voltage in the x direction, in the y direction, in the z direction. And these are partial derivatives. I'm not going to derive that, but this is the general expression. But when you have a spherical symmetry, that simplifies to the case where it's just got the one radial dependence. Okay? All right, just enough time. Does anybody have any questions about this? I want to do a little bit of an example. Does anybody have any questions about this? Equipotentials?